In honor of Father's Day this weekend, I wanted to invite a dad on who I believe has one of the most touching, inspiring, and captivating stories. After experiencing infertility, my guest and his wife, who have been married for 28 years, decided to adopt their first child. From there, their family just kept getting bigger. Six kids later and being blessed with a son who has Down syndrome, they are now in the process of adopting a 14-year-old girl in Colombia who has no idea. The story will move you to tears. And I have been wanting to do an episode that focuses on adoption and the peaks and valleys of special needs parenting. And I thought immediately of this guest who I've watched through his viral family vlogs and posts for years. Their family's content and stories have been shared everywhere, international media outlets, the BBC, the Today Show, all kinds of stuff. And this week on The Spillover, discussing all things fatherhood, navigating domestic and international adoption, and the blessing of seeing the world through the eyes of someone with Down syndrome is blogger, vlogger, and photographer Alan Lawrence from That Dad Blog. I have followed your family for years, I feel like, definitely the last several years. And I think that you are one of the most fun, adventurous, and creative dads on the internet.
Thank you. I like that one, yeah.
Oh, I love your content. And I know that you've been written about in everywhere from Time to the BBC, which is crazy. You've had all this viral success just kind of documenting what it's like being a dad.
It's been fun, yeah.
And so I just have to tell you, I think I wanted to have you on for Father's Day because I knew your story would blow people away.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited we finally got to meet because I've been following you forever. And we feel really blessed to have that voice on different platforms and media outlets to share about fatherhood and about having a child with special needs and a big family and all those fun things. And so we just like to wrap it all up in a big, fun package and send it out to people. So,
well, you've got six kids.
Six kids right now.
One with Down syndrome who loves drinking ketchup. Yes. I need to know why there is not a reality show about your family.
I don't know. We get people asking that all the time. And, you know, I think that's what the blog is for, but who knows, right? And it's just like so many things. People are like asking us all the time, like, are you planning this stuff? Or is like this? And I'm like, this is our life, guys. This is every day. This is happening, you know? And so having a big family, you just have to welcome those kind of things all the time, you know?
Well, that's what's interesting about your content is that I think that there are YouTube vlogging families and all this stuff where everything is planned on what's going to go viral, what's going to do well. Whereas you kind of post things about your family in real time as they're happening, where you're like, this is a really cute or funny or endearing moment with my kids.
Yeah, it's been really, and you know, every day is different. And I have ADD, and so I'm the most unorganized person. And so a lot of times it's just like having the camera out and going. And, you know, all of my kids have so unique personalities, each one of them so unique. And so it's just like, I don't have to make up this stuff.
But that's what
I need to.
Every person in your family, it's like they have a character, but it's very natural. Like Nikki is very much her own person, your wife. And then each of your kids, I'm like, oh, this is this person. This is this person, which makes it so fun. Your content is so fun. And I want to talk about so much things with your family. Okay, so we have to go to the beginning, which is how you and your wife, Nikki, met and got together.
So Nikki and I met, probably not the most romantic way we met, but we both were working at McDonald's. And just happened to see her and thought, you know what, this is a pretty beautiful girl and I'm going to ask her out. And so I went to ask her out and apparently another guy had beat me to the punch. And she was like, oh, you know, I'd love to go out with you, but I'm going out with Tim. He asked me out on Saturday. And so I said to her, well, just tell him you're going out with me. And she's like, I don't know how to do that. I'm like, tell him you're washing your hair. And so she went and told Tim, she's like, I'm washing my hair. I can't go out with you. And so Nikki right away was like, that's the thing I loved about you. It's just kind of your confidence. And so anyways, so I waited until she was 16 to go out with her. And so we kind of got married young. Like I was barely 20 and she was not quite 18 when we got married.
Oh so, my God. The tea.
Typical Utah family, I guess, right? Typical marriage in Utah. But anyways, yeah, that's kind of our love story, how we met and got together. And that was, you know, 27 years ago. And here we are now.
And here we are now. Your big family started with adoption, actually. What led up to that decision? What was going on in the dynamics of your and Nikki's relationship?
Yeah, it's a great question. So Nikki and I both come from big families. I had five siblings. She did as well. And so it was kind of one of those things, like, as we were dating, we're like, things started to progress. And we're like, so you like big families? And you're like, yeah. I'm like, okay, we can keep this relationship going. Yeah. And so as we were, soon after we were married, we were wanted to start our family, and soon discovered that Nikki had PCOS, and we were working through that. And so for 5 years, we tried different infertility things and issues to try to start our family, and just felt really strongly that we needed to look into adoption. And so we went down that road, and within, it's kind of unique, within a year, we had a birth mom come forward who was looking to place her daughter, and that's how we started our family. And so kind of a unique circumstance, because we didn't think we would ever have children biologically. And so adoption was like this perfect way of starting our family. And we have an open adoption as well with our daughter's birth mom. And then a year after we had our daughter placed in our home, Nikki miraculously was able to get pregnant, and the Lord just wanted us to start our family through adoption. And so that's how it all started. And then now we're six kids in, and who knows what will happen, right?
That's very unique to have an open adoption where the mom was like, sure, absolutely, I'm gonna place my child for adoption and, you know, be involved and let them get to know me. Is she somebody who consistently has been a part of your daughter's life?
Absolutely, yeah. We feel really, really blessed to have an open adoption with her. And it's so much as like our daughter has gone on vacation with her birth mom, and we're really good friends and are able to communicate with them, which I think is so helpful for our daughter to kind of have that background and to be able to meet with her and feel comfortable with her. But yeah, it's definitely something that's very unique in adoption to have an open adoption like that.
And so how old was she whenever Nikki found out she was pregnant for the first time?
So Gracie was, let's see, she was born in 2002, and so 2 years, she was two when our son was born, Zaccardi.
Okay, and so walk us through the ages of all of your kids and their different personalities.
Okay, so Gracie is, she's 20, and she is, she's our introvert, super smart, book smart, photographic memory. Zaccardi is our outgoing, very confident kid. He's loves doing all things that are dangerous, like dirt biking, all those sorts of things, and just very charismatic. And then Nicholas, Zach is 18, Nicholas is 16, and he's kind of a mix of all things. He's got a big heart, kind of likes to be a little rebellious and fun, and he's an amazing chef. And then Allie, our 14-year-old, she is just a sassy.
Let me tell you something about Allie. Allie is probably my favorite. I think she is one of the funniest teenagers ever.
She just has the biggest heart, and like every day is so unique with her. She is definitely one that needs her own talk show.
Yes.
Like, absolutely.
Like, she is a star. Like, when I see her kids on social media, I mean, so many of them have interesting personalities, and I love all of them for different reasons, but Allie just sticks out to me. I'm like, this girl is a star. Like, she should be on television shows and stuff. She's just so unique. Her comedic timing is unique. Her perspective. I feel like she's very wise for her age.
Yeah, and the unique thing about her is, like, she's had challenges with, you know, like weight and different things and feeling good in her own skin and different things like that. But she's been able to just really kind of fall into like the confidence and wanting to present herself in a way of like just being happy with who she is. And mm-hmm. So she's done that in such a fun way through her humor. And it's just been fun to watch her grow that way. So yeah, Allie's always great. Oh, you have to always be ready for the one-liners coming out of Allie. and then so after Allie was born, we thought we were done. Like we didn't think we'd have any other kids. And so there's a 5-year gap between Allie and Will. And so it was really interesting. One day we were just in the house and we thought we were done with all our kids. And I remember just sitting there thinking to Nikki, I'm like, okay, we got all the kids. Let's pull them into dinner with having dinner around the table. And I said, is this everybody? To Nikki, and she's like, yeah, everybody's here. And I'm like, I feel like we're missing someone. And she's like, oh no, here we go.
She knew that was baby fever.
Yeah, that was baby fever. And so not soon after that, Will joined our family. And so Will is 9. And he is just, I mean, he's incredible. Like, Will has blessed our family in so many unique ways. Like, we had no idea that Will had Down syndrome before he was born. And I mean, it's a long story about just coming in and understanding what a blessing having Will in our family would be, and kind of the start of, like, me originally learning that he had Down syndrome and feeling, you know, just, I guess, a lot of, like, selfish pride, you know, and kind of diving into the unknowns of, like, what that meant to have a child with Down syndrome. And I spent a lot of time just focusing on the negative. And I'd like to share a lot more about that.
Oh, yes, we are. After you give us the whole, you know, breakdown of the kids, yeah. I have a lot of Will questions.
Okay, great. And so then Rocco, who is almost 8, he is our little spunk. He's got a great heart. He's like a miniature version of Nikki, right? And he's just so cute. And he's our little elf. We call him our little elf.
And he is, am I wrong in this and thinking he is very, like, a sentimental child?
Oh, yeah, very much so.
Okay.
Yeah, very much so. Like, we just got a text from someone, a neighbor who's watching him, and she was feeding him breakfast, and he's like, oh, this breakfast is so great. Thank you so much. You're such a great mom. You know, that sort of thing. He's just very endearing that way. So I love that.
Okay, so how familiar were you with Down syndrome before having Will?
I knew nothing about Down syndrome.
Like, you didn't know anyone else in your personal life? You'd never grown up with people that had it or anything?
No interaction with anyone at all. Like, I didn't even know what it meant to have Down syndrome. I didn't know if people with Down syndrome could speak, what that meant, right? And so when Will was born, I'll back up a little bit. Like, a month before he was born, I had this strong impression that he was going to be different than our other children. And I wasn't quite sure what that meant. And so I remember just working at my computer, and I felt this strong feeling that your son Will is going to be different than your other kids. And I thought, great, you know, he's going to be a leader. He's going to be some attribute that's just different from the kids. And then a couple of weeks later, I got this very distinct feeling that he was going to be born with Down syndrome, and which is very rare because, like I said, I didn't know anyone with Down syndrome. I didn't know what that meant. And it was just a very strong impression. And so in my mind, that was God just kind of giving me this, like, precursor, you know, just like helping me to kind of, like, lean into that. But I kind of let it go. I asked Nikki, I'm like, so you're a little bit older. Like, what are the chances of our son being born with Down syndrome?
And how old was she when she was pregnant with Will?
She was 35 when she was pregnant with Will. And so, you know, I asked her, like, what are the chances of that? And she's like, well, the doctor didn't feel like there was any, you know, prenatal tests that need to be done or anything like that. So I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna let that go. And didn't tell Nikki about this kind of feeling that I was having. And then when Will was born, I remember they brought him over to the table, and they're, like, cleaning him off. And I'm, like, one of these dads that I like to get right there when my kids are born, because, like, I have this, like, anxiety. Like, I want them, the first thing they see is to see me, right? So I'm, like, pushing nurses out of the way. I'm, like, leaning in there. And he opened his eyes, and I could tell right away that he had Down syndrome. And I just felt like my whole world was rocked at that point. And I even remember asking the nurse, I was like, oh, I think you need to put more of that liquid in his eyes. Maybe his eyes are a little swollen. And she's like, no, he's good. We're done. And I'm just looking at him, and I remember just feeling like everything was done. Like, you know, just like this complete, like, darkness coming over me, because I was, like, rolling into these emotions of, like, what does this mean for our family? And
who was the first person to acknowledge him having Down syndrome to the other between you and your wife?
So as I'm looking at him and you know, I'm this photographer, I'm taking all these pictures. And then when I realized he had Down syndrome, I was kind of, like, went into this pause mode. And I remember the nurse coming over and saying to the doctor, I'm noticing some attributes. And that's all they said. And the doctor said, yeah, I can see those as well. We'll have to talk about that. And that was, like, a confirmation for me. And then they brought Will over to my wife and placed him on her chest. And then they started to talk to us about Down syndrome. And I remember it was really interesting, because I'm just, like, dwelling on all these bad things, all these unknowns, and, you know, what this might be, how this might impact me, you know, like, this selfish side of me. And I remember Nikki thinking or saying to me, like, he has Down syndrome. I'm saying, honey, he has Down syndrome. And she was saying, but he's healthy. He's here, and he's our baby, and God has blessed us with this baby. So we'll figure this out. And I'm like, just thinking, okay, whatever, you know, and going through that. And so then it wasn't till like, it took me a good few weeks before I started to come into like recognizing what a blessing Will was going to be for our family and for myself. And it was kind of unique. We're in the hospital before we had left the hospital. I remember listening to Nikki talking on the phone with people who were asking about Will, you know, and she's like saying, oh, he's this weight, his hair color's this, and his eye color's this, and he's got Down syndrome, and he's got this, and it's just going on.
She was
off.
Very matter of fact.
Yeah.
Like it was not a big deal.
Not a big deal. And I remember just after she got off the phone, I'm like, how can you just rattle that off? Like it's his hair color. And why are you not crying? And she turned to me in her sweet, loving little way. She's a very non-confrontational person. And she said, why are you crying? Like, God has blessed us with this baby. There are some things that are in our control and some things that are out of our control. So let's just take this one step at a time and we'll learn about it. And just love what's happening and love the moment right now. Love that you have a baby boy right in front of you. And that was my kind of first slap in the face of like opening my heart and realizing what a blessing this was going to be for our family.
Did she have experience with people with special needs before?
No, same thing. Just did not know anything about Down syndrome or know anyone with Down syndrome. And so we were both kind of walking into this new chapter in our lives, her with more of an open heart and me understanding that the Lord was blessing me with a son with Down syndrome, but also helping me to become a better person through my son having Down syndrome. And so, yeah, it was really interesting. And, you know, here's Nikki going through everything, a mom that had just given birth and now trying to babysit this husband who was trying to work through his selfish mindset. And I remember one thing she said to me that really struck me and kind of started opening my heart even more is, you know, I always mention like, oh, I'm going to be so sad when my kids move out. And, you know, because I love being a dad and I love being a kid with my kids. And she said, I'm going to tell you this. Christmas is always going to be magical with Will.
Yeah.
And I remember just sobbing after she said that. And that's like when my heart started to open. And of course, when our kids came in to see Will and like right before they come in, I'm like feeling like this dad, I got to prepare them for this, you know. And so we right before they come in, I'm like, guys, just so you know, Will has Down syndrome. And they're like, okay, what does that mean? And I'm like, well, that means, you know, like he might kind of have some mannerisms and behaviors like a kid for most of his life. And they're like, heck yes, that's great. Cool, let's go see him. Why are we in here? Let's go do this. And I was just like watching them go in. They're like, they don't care. You know, they're just going to love him for who he is, for who he is. And that's just like me again, starting to be like, Alan, you need to wake up and just start listening to your kids. Your kids are going to teach you so much. And so that was the beginning of just kind of like seeing the beauty of having a child with special needs and how it's going to bless our family.
Walk us through some of those initial milestones that you reach with a child with Down syndrome and how that might be different than parenting like a neurotypical kid, I guess. Is that the right way to say
it? Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So that is, I mean, when you talk about milestones, that's definitely something as a parent with a child who has special needs that you just, you know, you kind of throw your expectations out the window and you know, comparison is going to be the thief of joy for sure because every kid is different. Like there's different spectrums with Down syndrome.
Okay. You know? Talk about that.
Yeah. So you have children that are going to be in Down syndrome that you would say are... What's the term I'm looking for?
Like highly functioning?
Yeah, a little higher functioning. So you're going to have kids with Down syndrome that are a lot higher functioning. And then you also have kids that could have a dual diagnosis. So some kids with Down syndrome could have autism and Down syndrome.
Really? I don't think I knew that.
Yeah. And so that there's just a lot of, like I said, a different spectrum with Down syndrome. And so Will is more on the higher functioning side. And so, you know, like walking and different things like that, I would say... And Nikki could correct me more, but like they're a year or two behind.
Okay.
Right? Typical children, what we'd call typical children, right? And so Will potty trained when he was four, which actually is really unique because like So, well, and I'm going to back up a little bit too, because Nikki was feeling very inspired after Will was born, because there was this huge gap between Allie and Will.
Mm-hmm.
And she's thinking, you know, Will's going to need a little protector, a little brother to kind of guide and go with him through school and all the different things. And that was truly divine, because Will, Will potty trained at 4, and everyone asks us, how did you guys do this? What is the secret? And we're like, Rocco, Rockwell's the secret. Like, get yourself a Rocco, you know what I mean? Because Will basically just wanted to, everything his little brother was doing is what he would want to do. So he's mentoring, right? And that is something that was a really sweet, like, reminder for us about why inclusion is so important for these kids, because that's a totally different topic we can go into. But but with milestones, yeah, it's getting your kids immersed in opportunities for the children with Down syndrome or other special needs to see other, what they'd call typical kids, reaching their milestones. And so Will seeing his brother walk, like Rocco walked before him and Rocco potty training before him. And now Will is, you know, he's 9 and he sees Rocco riding his bike and he wants to ride a bike. And so, yeah, I think, you know, as far as milestones, it's just a matter of like patience.
How is he with language and finally talking and everything?
Well, I'm proud to say this first word was dad. So that really? that was a bonus. That was great.
Cause I nannied when I was way younger, 18 or 19, I nannied for a family. They had 2 twin boys with Down syndrome that were 6 when I was nannying them, and they both still couldn't talk. They had like their own little language. I would know certain sounds that they would make, what that meant, like ga meant strawberry yogurt, like weird things like that. Like, so I knew they were a little bit behind on language. So I was just curious.
Well, for Will, it's been, like, he's been able to articulate really well. Like I said, he's a little bit more higher functioning. But for people with Down syndrome, we like to compare it to, like when I go into Will's class or I teach other kids about Down syndrome, I'd say it's like putting a bunch of cotton balls in your mouth and trying to talk, right? Because their muscle tone is very low, having Down syndrome, and so your tongue is a muscle. And so for them to use their tongue in articulation, it takes a little bit more time. And so we had what they call an up to 3 program. So that we have someone come to our house and help learn with speech and different things like that. But the thing, and so Will is a good talker, but the advantage too that we had is he's got a lot of siblings. So he's around a lot of people hearing a lot of different words. So has a lot of practice that way.
What have been some of the most amazing pockets of joy, I guess I'll say, that you've encountered with parenting someone like Will? Just cute moments or things growing up, funny things.
Sure. So, I mean, obviously, like, the Will Can Fly stuff that we did. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, but explain to my audience who's never followed you and is just getting to know you for the first time what Will Can Fly is.
Gotcha. So, when Will was learning to roll over, he would roll over onto his stomach, and when he would get on his stomach, he was trying so hard to get up and just keep moving. And he would put his arms behind his back. So he's on his stomach, and he would put his arms behind his back and flap his arms and wiggle his legs. And so for the longest time, we joked with our kids that Will was trying to fly. And we're like, one day he's just going to take right off. And it was the cutest thing. And I remember sitting in the living room while he was doing that one day, and you know, everybody had known this in our family and community on social media that Will was had this little cute attribute. And so being a photographer, a graphic designer, all those things, I thought, let's just make him fly. Let's do this. And so my son was there and I said, let's go outside before mom gets home. We got him in his pajamas. Let's go make him fly. And I'm going to Photoshop myself out. I'm going to hold him up. He's going to do his little wiggle thing. And then we'll Photoshop him out. And I'm going to send this to your mom and say, hey, just the wheel started flying. You know, like, trying to get him to bring him to bed. And so we took that photo. It was super cute. We posted it, and everyone just fell in love with it. They're like, oh, Will's flying. Great. You know, he can do anything he puts his mind to.
And was this one of the first big viral moments for your family on the internet?
Yeah, and it was kind of interesting how it transpired and grew. Like, as I took that picture and I started sending it out to people, and they were like, wow, you know, like, look at Will. He's doing everything, and that you know, or he's flying, you know, and I started thinking to myself, like, this is really cute because our family came together to support him in something. And as we support him as a family, he's going to be able to do anything that he puts his mind to, right? Because like that first mindset that I had when he was born, thinking that he's going to be very limited. He's going to place limits on our family. And here he was now, like, flying. And so I felt like God was telling me that this is a message that I could share with the world, also with other dads, you know, related to not having those same sort of selfish feelings about having a child with special needs. And so I started posting more pictures. It just became like this fun activity for the family. Like, what are we going to do today? What's it going to be the Will Can Fly picture today? And so we had Will flying with us at dinner. Like, we're eating dinner and he's flying over us. Or the kids are doing homework and he's, you know, like patting a rattle on their head or all sorts of different things. And the next thing we knew, it kind of taken a life of its own and started to grow in social media and this message of inclusion and showing that, you know, people with Down syndrome had so much to offer the world if we could just give them a chance and support them.
And how did that even increase throughout the years? Started with Will Can Fly, then what other things did you share of Will that was just blowing people's minds or encouraging them or entertaining them on social media?
So, yeah, I mean, Will, it just, the thing that's so unique about Will is he has no filter. And, like, he sees everybody at face value. And so when we go to the grocery store or anything like that, we always say that strangers are friends that Will hasn't met yet. And so, a lot of times when we take Will to the store, we're like, okay, we're just going to get more ketchup for him, but we got to plan for like an hour because when we go into the store, it's all the time. It's, hey, what's your name? My name's Will. What's your name? You know, and like, do you have a dog? That's the next question. Every time. Do you have a cat? You know, and so. But it has opened up so many unique opportunities for us to get to know people and to meet people that otherwise we'd just be walking past. And we took a trip to New York and we were on the subway. And I'm like, this is going to be so bad, guys. We got to hone Will in on this because, like, this is going to be very unique for our family. And, like, I'm doing different things. We had six kids on a subway in New York. And I turn and Will has, like, it was in his stroller and kind of scooted himself over to this gentleman who looked really rough. And he's like, hey, what's your name? And the guy kind of looks over at him and Will's just looking at him. He's like, you got a dog? And this guy just starts smiling. And this really rough guy, you know, that I would have perceived as this like dangerous person. And Will was just bringing the heart into the situation and compassion. And this gentleman by the end was taking his hat off and putting him on Will. And just, yeah, just he has a way. He has a light to him that people with Down syndrome, I tell everybody, if you meet someone with Down syndrome for just 5 minutes, if you get to face-to-face with them, it'll change your perspective for life.
Tell everyone about the ketchup.
Oh, yeah. So that's the ongoing ketchup saga. So I'm not quite sure when it started. I would say probably when Will was about 6 years old and he could open the fridge. So what kid doesn't like chicken nuggets or, you know, chicken fingers? And they love them and ketchup. And we just noticed, like, at the end of the day, Will was, like, scooping the ketchup and eating it. And so we're like, okay, whatever. You know, kids do weird things. And then as he got older, he would open the fridge. And I noticed him in the fridge. I'm like, oh, that's so cute. And I come around the corner and he has ketchup and he's drinking it, just like downing it like it's, you know, an energy drink or something and just sucking it right out of the bottle. And we all kind of joked about it and put it back and just kind of went on. Next thing we know, this became a habit. You know, it's like, hey, let's go play outside. I'll be right back. I'm going to drink. Go to the fridge.
And
drinking ketchup.
And so were you first like, you can't, like, you don't drink ketchup. Did you try to stop or were you okay?
Well, at first, I mean, being the guy that I am, I'm like getting out my phone. I'm like, oh my gosh, look at this, guys. And then I'm like, okay, stop. You really can't do that. You know, like, don't drink so much ketchup. And so, yeah, we tried to curtail it. And then we've tried like swapping out the ketchup with like V8 juice.
And did he notice?
And so for the first little bit, so we had a little bit of ketchup in it just to kind of, you know, make sure it wasn't too like hard of a switch. And so the first little bit, I think there was just so much ketchup in there that he couldn't taste the V8 juice. And it was really funny because we're sitting at the table and I'm kind of watching him and recording it. And he starts drinking, he's down and, you know, he's throwing it back. And then he's like, yeah. And then he looks at it and he looks over at me recording him. He's like, dad. And his exact words were, dad, you trick of me. And I'm like, what? And he's like, you evil. It was the cutest thing. And I was able to catch that on camera.
But one of my favorite things that you've posted of him I think you guys were at Home Goods or something. But you included a clip, like you were just walking through the aisles, and I don't know, there was like a statue head or a bust or something. And he just like bends over and just kisses it on the lips and then yeah. just keeps walking.
Just like, hey, what's up? I think it was a big Buddha head.
Yes.
And it's so funny because like we see that now. It's just, that's one of the joys of having a child with special needs. It's like he just walks up, kisses Buddha, and we're like, cool, dude. Okay, let's go over here. And then he's going over and just, you know, trying on like high heels and those sorts of things. And so, yeah, it's every day is an adventure and a joy. And so.
What has been the toughest moment of parenting a child with special needs so far? Like a heartbreaking moment.
I think for me, it has been watching him to start to recognize that he's different. Like, I mean, he's 9 and we're really starting to notice him be aware that he's not able to learn quite up to the same level as kids his age, and the frustration that comes to him and not really understanding why that's happening. And that's been really hard for me to see him go through that and try to explain to him, you know, because we'll tell him, you know, you have Down syndrome and this is amazing, you know, you're blessed. And we don't want him, we hope that he always feels that way, that it's a true blessing in his life. But as he's growing up, he's starting to understand that creates some challenges for him.
Like what has happened recently? An example of that?
I would say with reading. Yeah, that's been a big one. He loves to look at books and do different things. And Rocco is at that state where he's reading. And so like Will has always, I felt like, been able to be like, okay, if Rocco's doing that, in a year from now, I'm totally doing that. I'm going to get that down. And reading hasn't been one of those things where he's been able to really quickly transition into, and it's been a real challenge for him, and he gets really frustrated. It's hard to watch him in that state.
This is probably a super ignorant question, but I just genuinely don't know. Do people with Down syndrome get to a place where sometimes they can learn how to read or it's unlikely?
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. And so, I mean, that goes to the different levels of functioning, but yeah, I believe, you know, Will definitely be able to read at some point. And, you know, there's different things with different levels of math and that he will not be able to do. Or, well, I don't want to say never, but potentially, right? But absolutely.
And does he go to traditional school or homeschooled?
So we had Will going to a traditional public school. And that's another thing with having a child that's been with Down syndrome that's been very challenging is just inclusion in school. Mm-hmm. And so he was going to school for this first year or this year, and we felt very strongly that we needed to take him out and kind of reevaluate his time. So he has what they would call a life skills class where he goes sort of like a resource kind of class that he would go and spend the majority of his time. And we've been fighting for more inclusion where he can be in with his typical peers while learning, right? And the majority of his school. There's obviously going to be time where he needs to go and mm-hmm. be with the resource teacher, and they have to adapt the curriculum for sure. But it's been a challenge. It's been a real challenge for us. And we felt really strongly that, you know, as he's in this sort of resource class, it's creating some limits for him just because the variations of the different children with needs that are in that class. And like, I mean, Will models other kids. And so if he's in a class where there's some kids that are maybe a little lower functioning, he's not going to push himself hard.
Yeah.
And so if we don't push for more inclusion, then he doesn't get as much time in the class with his typical peers. And so that creates a challenge with him in his learning. And so we felt inspired this year to take him out.
And how has he been doing since you've homeschooled?
He's doing good. Yeah, he's doing great. We've been able to like laser focus on reading, laser focus on the things that writing his letters. And so, and I in no way want to like sort of bash his teachers that we're trying to help him. But like, I feel like this is allowed his mind to like be a little more focused and a little more comfortable on the things that he's really good at, so we could really dial in on them, like reading and writing.
I think that's the case for even typical kids is just having that one-on-one time with a teacher and everything, they can just improve in so many things. I've covered that on the show before, but there's just so many problems with public schools and how kids are learning.
Absolutely.
And everything. So it totally makes sense to me that he'd be flourishing now. Sometimes you go, speaking of classrooms, though, you've gone and you've spoken to classrooms about Down syndrome and stuff. What has been one of the cutest things that has happened when you've done that?
Oh, yeah. I love the opportunity to do that because the kids have so many questions, you know? And so the most recent time we went and did that in Will's class, we walk in and, you know, I'm kind of explaining that I'm Will's dad and different things like that. And I asked the kids, I said, can anyone tell me what it means to have Down syndrome? And I put that question to the group because I just love putting it out there to see where their mindset is. And so Will had been in this class and the kids had been, you know, interacting with him and they knew him. And the cutest, the most like it made me emotional to hear this young man say, to have Down syndrome means you have a superpower. It means you have a special gift that you have a big heart and that you easily love other people. And I was just like sobbing almost. I'm like, that's incredible. Like, this kid is going to be a leader. Like, this is what we need, right?
Like, who are your parents? I want to hug them.
I know, let's write a book. And so that's so important. And, you know, as we talk about something that's very near and dear to my heart, are people with Down syndrome, when we talk about like the abortion rate of people getting a diagnosis of after they find out they have a child with Down syndrome, and mm-hmm. the abortion rate is so terrible. And some countries that, you know, looking at sort of eradicating Down syndrome. And
does that blow your mind that if Will was born to anyone else in another country, he may not even exist just because he has Down syndrome?
I can't fathom it. I don't even want to fathom it because we have, there's countries where when a child is born with Down syndrome, they're immediately put into an orphanage if they're not aborted. It just blows my mind, you know, having a son with Down syndrome and the light that he is to the world. And so for these kids in school to have that impression, to meet Will and have that kind of impression, like this kid has a superpower, he's a light to the world. That's so critical.
Because it could shape another generation how they view it.
Like this young man, I would say when he's older and him and his wife, you know, are having a child and the doctor says, you know, your son has Down syndrome, they're going to be like, we got this. We can do this, you know. And that's so important because for the longest time, as a parent with a child who has Down syndrome, I'm thinking, how can I change the mindset of these doctors who are telling these moms, you know, like when they receive a Down syndrome diagnosis, like, oh, you know, these are the limitations of your child with Down syndrome. And, you know, it's going to be really hard. And it's probably better if you just end this child's life now. And I'm like thinking, how can I change the mindset of these doctors or these geneticists that are inputting this information into people's minds? And for the longest time, I'm thinking, I got to create pamphlets and do all these things to speak with these doctors. And we just need to go upstream to these kids in the schools and teach them. And that's why inclusion is so important for these kids in school. And that's why kids with Down syndrome need to be integrated into schools so that they can teach these kids, they can make them better leaders, they can make them better people in general.
We can cut this out if you have no idea what I'm talking about, but it just popped in my mind. Did anybody ever send you, or did you see it yourself, the one of the more recent Love is Blind seasons on Netflix? There was a woman on this dating show who I guess worked with kids with special needs. And she's like, well, because I work with kids that have Down syndrome and stuff, I 100% am pro-choice because I just see how tough that is. And I think those women need to have an abortion or whatever.
Yeah.
I just wondered if anyone had sent you that or like what your reaction was.
Oh, yeah. That stirred the tribe for sure.
I can imagine that. That would piss me off.
Oh, yeah. Like to hear her say that and to think you're working with children with special needs. How are you?
How's your heart not softened?
Yeah. At what capacity are you working with these children to make a comment like that? It goes back to my whole thought of like, if you have 5 minutes interacting with someone with Down syndrome, it'll change your life forever. It'll change your heart. And so in my mind, this is my own theory. That's propaganda. That's just something to stir the pot. And so that's how I look at it. And that's how I just kind of, and you have to have, you know, having a child with special needs, you have to have thick skin, you know, and look at things. And I'll tell you, I'll share a story too with that view. So on my YouTube channel, I had someone comment on one of my videos with Will saying your baby should have been killed and you're torturing your baby by keeping him alive and all these negative things. And it was just really hard. And Papa Bear just wanted to come out and digitally punch this person, you know. And I felt this strong impression to take a step back, take a breath, walk away for a minute, and then come back. And I came back to this comment and I started to chat with them. I'm like, sorry that you feel that way. Like, I love my son and this, he's such a blessing to our family. And the person responded negatively again, like, oh, this is propaganda. What you're doing, these are lies. You know, you're just trying to do this for likes and different things and wait until your child gets older. He's going to be such a burden on your life and all these things. And again, just like, the rage, you know, that wants to come out, and then stepping back and saying, like, everybody has a story. I'm going to see where this goes. I feel like God's guiding me to share more with this person. So I started talking more with them, saying, like, I know a lot of people with Down syndrome who are older, and they're a huge blessing to their family and to their community. And I'm sorry that you feel this way. I'd love to get on a phone call with you and talk about this. And we interacted, and then the heart was getting softened, and a little more and more, the negative stopped, and the person started talking to me. And then there was a pause. And then I came back an hour later and this person to comment and said, I want to let you know that I think your son is beautiful. Same person.
What?
Yeah. I want to let you know that I think your son is beautiful and what you're doing is fantastic. She said, I actually have a sister with Down syndrome. And when my sister was born, my parents gave her all of the attention. And it was hard for me because she stole that attention. And now my parents are getting older and I'm caring for her and I'm having to deal with that frustration, that anger that I had of that lost connection with my parents growing up. And I'm learning to work through that. And so here was this person, you know, that never would have guessed that.
Did that blow your mind? Oh, yeah. Were you like, Nikki, look at this?
I know. I was like, I told her, I said, I would love to connect you with someone in your community that can help you. Let's work through this. And it just turned out to be this great thing. It was just taking the time to pause, take a deep breath, know that everybody's coming from a different situation. And then that was the result of that.
There may be somebody listening right now who just found out that their baby has Down syndrome, or maybe they have a close friend or family member that just had a baby with Down syndrome. What are the most important things for them to know as they embark on this parenting journey?
Most important thing for sure is to know, well, first of all, like, welcome to the club. Welcome to the cool club, right? And know that there's going to be challenges, but the joy is going to outweigh the challenge for sure. And absolutely understand that you don't have to do this alone. There is a huge community out there. And connect with people. Find people on social media. I can guarantee that if you reach out to a mama on Instagram that has a child with Down syndrome and you say, I need some help, 100%, they're going to welcome you to the tribe right away. It's this unique world that I never knew existed before, Will, that's out there. And they'll welcome you with open arms. And also understand that your son or daughter is going to be a huge blessing to your life and your kids' life. It's going to teach your children so much about empathy, so much about being more compassionate to people that are different.
One of your older sons just took a girl with Down syndrome to the prom, didn't he?
Yeah, that was amazing. And that was totally his idea. Like, just he had seen her in one of his classes where they work with kids with special needs. And she actually has Down syndrome and autism. And they just had a great time, you know? Like, just
that had to have made you really proud.
Oh, I was crying. Yeah, super emotional, right? Proud dad moment for sure. And so another thing that I started to know with like a change with my kids after Will was born, I remember Allie specifically, we were in the store and, you know, I'm still trying to figure this all out. And I remember Allie saying, Dad, look at that woman over there. She has Down syndrome. And I looked across the aisle in the grocery store and here was this woman with Down syndrome. And I'm like, oh, you're right. She has Down syndrome. And she's like, wow, she's so beautiful. And I remember sobbing, thinking to myself, Will is teaching my kids things that I never could have taught them as a parent. And so that was super important and just a life-changing thing for me.
My summer beauty hack, get an ice roller. Stick it in your fridge. Get an amazing serum, like the vitamin C serum from Nimi Skincare. Put that on and then use that ice roller to de-puff, cool, and just tuck that serum deep into your skin. And if you're not ice rolling, what the heck are you even doing? If you're not using conservative Onimi skincare in your home, double what the heck are you even doing? Are you trying to avoid companies that don't share your beliefs in family, freedom, faith, and femininity? Are you looking to switch up your skincare to be tailored more to the stage of life you're currently in and not the one that you were in senior year of high school? Make the switch to Nimi skincare today. Go to NimiSkincare.com to see all their products and lines from hydrating and anti-aging to brightening an evening with vitamin C. Need a good conservative-owned face sunscreen for summer? They've got that too. NimiSkincare.com with code Alex Clark for 10% off your order every time. That's NimiSkincare.com with code Alex Clark or click the link in the show notes. How does someone with Down syndrome see the world?
Well, I would say that Will specifically sees everyone as like, you're my best friend and I love you until you hurt me. Like I go into like it's meeting someone, I'm like, I don't trust you until you can prove that I can trust you. Complete opposite with someone with Down syndrome. And the other great thing about people with Down syndrome is you know where you stand all the time. Right?
They'll like be, when he said, you evil.
Yeah.
When he switched right? his ketchup.
Or they'll come up and say, I love you. You know what I mean? And you're my best friend for life, you know, kind of thing. And it's just so, and it's genuine. When someone with Down syndrome tells you they love you. Mm-hmm. Right? And they will do anything for you. And they'll always remember you. And I have older people with Down syndrome who I've met, been blessed to meet throughout the years. And they'll call me randomly and they're like, I wrote a song for you. And I'm like, are you serious? Let me hear this. And they'll sing this most incredible song for me. And I'm like, what a huge blessing. And then at the end, they'll be like, hey, I just want you to know I love you. Okay. And I'm like, okay, buddy, we'll see you. And like huge blessing in my life to have that opportunity, very real love. And yeah, it's like I said, 5 minutes with someone with Down syndrome will change your life.
And some people with Down syndrome, do they ever end up living on their own and doing things like that? I mean, obviously they can have jobs and things. I'm just thinking for people that just found out this diagnosis and they're feeling scared or nervous and they have no idea what to expect.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, again, it goes on to more higher functioning and different things like that. But Tim Harris, perfect example. Look him up on the internet. He's an individual with Down syndrome who has his own business. He's a motivational speaker. He's wrote his own book and things like that, like incredible things. You know, it comes back to the tribe, the family, supporting them in the things they want to do, not placing limits on them. That's one thing we do with Will. You know, like we treat him like our other kids, right? If we're gonna put limits on him, if we're babying him and thinking that he, you know, can't do certain things like, oh, he'll never ride a bike, things like that. We treat him like our other kids. Obviously, his milestones are different, but yeah, absolutely, they'll have jobs. There's people that move out. There's people with Down syndrome that get married.
Have you guys watched Love on the Spectrum as a family?
No, we haven't yet.
Oh my gosh!
We need to, yes.
You have to watch the show. Your kids would love it.
I know. Again, Alex, 6 kids. It's not
okay.
A long time.
Okay. You guys have got to watch it because even though it is primarily about kids with autism dating and trying to find love, there are a few people that they have featured that have Down syndrome.
Oh, I love
and
that.
It is just amazing watching these people talk about what I'm looking for. Do I want to get married? Am I just looking for casual dating? I mean, all the things
so
that we
awesome.
Go through.
Yeah.
But it's just so unique. And you fall in love with certain ones. And then there's other ones where you're like, you don't like them as much. You know, just
yeah.
like real people in the world. There are people you like and
totally.
People you don't like. But it is just such a pure, just wholesome show.
I love
that
it.
I'm sure your older kids would really love. One thing that I had to talk to you about that really sticks out to me about your family and you in particular is that you guys do so many adventures with each other. Like, you guys are jumping in frozen lakes in the middle of winter and all this crazy stuff. And I was wondering if having kids that are adventurous was a planned parenting decision ahead of time. Like, as a family, I want us to be brave and adventurous and show our kids how to be courageous between you and your wife, or if that's just something that ended up happening?
That's a great question. That's definitely something that I think it evolved. I grew up in a family that was, there. Surprisingly or not, a family that was of introverts. Mm-hmm. So homebodies. My parents are very much homebodies. My dad actually one time said, I wish I could be a hermit, that kind of thing. And so here I was, kind of this heart of just like, I want to see and explore it all. And then Nikki having that maybe a little lower level of that kind of drive. But we both felt strongly as a couple as time went on. And I would say as Will came into our lives, we really started to see the importance of getting out of our comfort zones, right? And Will really opened our eyes to that, because he, like I said, he introduces us to so many people. And as we, you know, the different things that we did on social media were blessed to go viral, meet different people, we understood that getting out of our comfort zone was so important to break us and to help us be 1% better every day. And so the adventurous side, that's kind of, I would say Will was one that really helped that to evolve. And, you know, we do the cold therapy, like getting in the frozen rivers, and it's all about getting out of your comfort zone. That's one thing that I feel is so important for our kids to learn.
I am just blown away. And obviously, what we see on social media is what you want us to see. I mean, we don't know what happens 100% of the time. But what my perception is of your family is that even with teenagers, you guys have managed to be unbelievably close-knit and really prioritizing family time. And that your kids, not only are they spending time with you, it seems like they want to spend time with their parents. And I think a lot of people see that and they're like, how are you doing that? Because my teenagers want nothing to do with me. You know, how have you managed to foster that love of being together as a family as your kids get older?
That's a great question. You know, I think a lot of that comes from being approachable as a parent, right? I just feel like each of my kids is different, are different. Each of my kids are different. And so it's a matter of like finding a way for them to fall into their personalities. And so being approachable in the way of, I would say the best, it not being intimidating as a dad, so important. Like there's attributes that I feel are very important as a dad that I tell other dads, and that is love, pray, learn, and lead. Those are the four things that I kind of like gauge myself with all the time as a dad. And so love, that is me telling my kids that I love them, vocalizing that to them so that they feel that, they know that. And I think a lot of times dads tend to think, oh, you know, I protect and I provide, so you know that I love you through that, right? And then the moms tend to be more the ones that are vocalizing love. And my dad never told me he loved me, and not till a couple of years before my mom passed away. And so that was hard for me. And so telling my kids that I love them, that creates a bond to where they feel comfortable to approach me. And praying together. Like we pray as a family. We sit at the dinner table together and pray as a family. We pray for our kids. You know, my wife and I pray for our kids. That's important. And when we pray as a family, we're praying for each other, and we're praying for people in our lives that we need. And we're possibly praying for things that I need in my life. So my kids see that I'm vulnerable and they understand that I'm vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Right. And so that makes me a little more approachable. I feel like when my kids see that I have some vulnerability, and learn is really important. One attribute to where when I approach my kids and they talk to me, and I'm going to listen. As a dad, I'm just going to listen. And a lot of times as a dad, we feel like I'm the teacher. I'm going to tell you all the ways to fix the problem, and that's all I'm going to do, and then move on. But a lot of times we just need to let our kids come to us. I'm like, how's your day? And then we're just going to listen to what they say and we're going to take it all in and we're just going to let them dump on us, right? And it's so important as a dad to do that. My kids, they will come and I had to fight the urge to be like, here's the solution. You know, I'm the great wise man to tell you what to do. Fight that urge and just let them dump. And then you can teach them, right? And then lead. That is one thing that I am definitely conscious of. And lead with your wife, like together, counsel with each other on your kids. So I think a lot of times as a dad, we're like, I'm going to protect and provide. And then wife's got the nurturing side and doing all the things with the kids and kind of let her run that ship. And especially in our times today with so many things our kids are bombarded with, right? We need to work together as husband and wife and really come together and throw the pride out the window. And there's times when you know, I see things with our kids that we need to do. And my wife's like, that's great. I didn't notice that. And there's times when my wife sees something and I'm like, I didn't ever notice that. And working together is so important. We can't just let one lead and not the other. So,
how important has it been to, with having such a big family, to prioritize private moments or moments away with your wife from the kids? Like how big of a part has that played in the success of your marriage, you think?
So crucial, so critical. And we've noticed that it's more than just getting away. It's finding moments where we can connect, right? So you can get away and go do something and then you're just kind of in the moment going, but like going for a bike ride or just simple things, going for a hike together. And it's critical to help my wife and I get grounded, right? Because a lot of times we get maybe absorbed in our job or absorbed in, you know, hobbies or different things like that. You know, there's that tendency to want to do that. And so that one-on-one time, so critical, and to the point where like we're planning that on a weekly basis. Like we need to have our alone time. It could be just us going for a walk.
I think some people, they feel, I don't know if it's self-conscious, but they feel like, well, I'm failing in my marriage if I have to plan alone time with my spouse. They have a hang up around the idea of planning.
Yeah, I feel like that's a distraction. That's because there are so many facets of being a parent, right? That planning together time, like, I mean, you don't have to plan every detail of what's going to happen with that. But I mean, you're going to plan things that you're doing with your children. You're going to plan things that you're going to do as a couple. So mm-hmm. I disagree with that. I think it's important that we have those times planned out.
All right. Well, speaking of making plans, you are in the process of adopting a 14-year-old girl and she has no idea.
She has no idea. I know. It breaks my heart.
What is going on? Start from the beginning. Everything. I want to know every detail. How did you meet her? Where did she live? Everything.
All right. Yeah, it's one of those situations like Will, where we were like, oh, I feel like we're done with our kids. You know, we had six kids, we're great. And the Lord had a different plan for us, right? And so I work for an organization called Rod's Heroes, and we go to orphanages and we help children with Down syndrome or other unique circumstances, other special needs, find families who are in a situation where no other extended family wants to adopt them or anything like that. And so we're finding families for them. And we were in Colombia. So we were at an orphanage where we would call typical kids that were close to aging out. So in Colombia, when a child turns 16, they age out of the adoption process. And at that point, they're no longer adoptable. And it's really sad circumstances. Like some of these kids will end up on the streets, immediately come homeless, whatnot. And so we were there meeting at this orphanage to tell these stories of these children. And I had gone into this situation thinking I would adopt a child with Down syndrome for sure. Typical child, that's never on my mind. And as the day went on, and as we were meeting with these kids, we had this first day and I kind of went into work mode, like we're videoing and capturing these kids' stories. And then the next day we had a big dance party with all the children in the orphanage. And I'm a terrible dancer. And so
now it's just you here or you and your wife?
It was just me and the founder of the organization and a few other people, a film crew, videoing these kids' stories. And so I'm trying to dance with these kids and this girl who just, I had felt something when I've interviewed her. I could see her and I was like, what a confident girl. I love her. She's just seems so, there's something about this. She saw that I was a terrible dancer. She came over and tried to help me. It was cute. She had sympathy for me. And so we started dancing together and I'm telling her stupid dad jokes and she's laughing. And, you know, as the day wore on, I just felt this like protection mode with her, and to a point where I was like feeling something, right? And so as the day wore on, I was like, where is she? And I was just kind of like dialing into wherever she was. And we started to communicate more. And I was asking her all these things that she likes to do. And I'm feeling something. And I'm like, okay, this, I get this all the time when I'm with a kid. I'm like, could I adopt this child? But something's a little bit different here. I'm like praying in my heart, help me to know that maybe I'm feeling something a little more unique here. And so we were getting ready to leave. And I said, I've had so much fun with you and I'm going to miss you. And I said, I realize I don't have any, I've been asking you questions all day. Do you have any questions for me? And I'm using Google Translate on my phone. She speaks Spanish.
I was going to say, does she speak English even?
No.
Oh, this is a whole other conversation. Okay, I have so many questions about this. Okay. So you're using Google Translate. You're talking to her. What does she say about her question?
And so what questions do you have for me? And she paused and she looked up at me and then looked down at the phone. Like she was really kind of thinking about how she wanted to say this. And she speaks into the phone and she hands it over to me. And I look at it and she said, I want to be your daughter.
Stop.
And I called her by name and I just started sobbing. And she immediately had this look like she'd done something bad. And I'm like, no, it's okay. It's just like, I'm sorry. I'm like, it's okay. Because that was a confirmation for me that she's feeling it too. Like, here I am feeling like I need to adopt her. And she just confirmed that. And so I replied and said, I will pray, is my response to her. Because I wasn't sure what to say. I mean, I obviously, absolutely, I want to adopt you. And so then she's like, well, I need to go to school. And I said, well, I'll miss you. And she left and she walked away and I'm just crying. And she stopped and she turned around and looked at me one last time and she waved and like, I'm sorry I said that. Is that okay? And I was like, it's okay. I'll see you. And she left and I went behind the orphanage and just cried like a baby. And again, here's me asking Heavenly Father, God, I need one more confirmation that I need to do this. And so I come out and I thought she'd gone on the bus and left at that point. And so I'm meeting with the film crew and we're trying to figure out the next steps for the next children that we need to do videos, documentaries for. And I hear this cute little voice go, bye, 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 bye. And I look around the corner and she comes running away from the group over. And I'm like, what, is she going to come to me or is she going to come to someone else in the group? And she comes running over to me, wraps her arms around me. And I almost kissed her on the forehead. Like it was Allie coming to me, like mm-hmm. my daughter. I was just feeling that. And she comes and like, I actually put my head on my chin on the top of her head. And I'm like, ooh, that was close. And then I look up and I'm like, I'll miss you. And I almost wanted to be, it's almost like one of those moments where I'm like saying, hey, when you come home from school, you know, get with mom. I got some chores for you. Like, it was just that feeling like I've known her before. It was natural. And that was the last time I saw her. And then I got on the phone. I said, Nikki, we need to adopt this girl. She's 13 years old. She was 13 years old at the time. Her birthday was on May 5th. She just recently had a birthday, but we need to adopt this girl. I'm on my way to Ecuador. I won't be able to talk to you more about this.
You dropped this on your wife. You said, I want to adopt this random girl that I just met in another country. Yeah. And then you just said, gotta go, bye.
I'm getting on a plane. See ya. And her response was, Alan, you cannot adopt all the kids. Stay focused. And the next day, we're in Ecuador and I'm sending all these photos that I'd had of her and some video content. And she's like, Alan, this is just a 13-year-old girl, doesn't speak English. We don't know what trauma she's had. How can we do this? I don't know how we can do this. And I said, pray about it, fast about it. This is our daughter. And the Lord has told me that this is our daughter and that we need to get her into our home, teach her divine potential, and get her out of here as soon as possible.
How much time passed then between that conversation and when you got to see Nikki again and talk about this in depth?
So we were in Ecuador for, I believe it was 2 or 3 days. And then there was some time passing with travel and different things. So roughly 3 days. And so there's another unique thing about this. So as you know, our oldest daughter is adopted.
Mm-hmm.
And while we were on this trip, there was someone else in our group who was posting some things to social media about the kids we were meeting and different stuff like that. And my oldest daughter, Gracie, who's adopted, was following that. And Nikki, in the meantime, you know, like while I'm in Ecuador, is like, I don't know how we can do this. I prayed about it. I don't know how I feel. And our daughter, Nikki, was in church with our kids, and our kids had heard Nikki and I having this conversation. They're hearing one side, Nikki saying, we can't adopt a child with a teenager, you know, it doesn't speak English. And so our kids are hearing this one side, and my son, they were waiting for church to start. And my son turns to my wife and is like, is dad really wanting to adopt a 13-year-old girl? And she's like, yes, he's talking about adopting this girl, and we don't know yet what we're going to do. And my daughter, Gracie, said, is it that girl with the beautiful eyes? And Nikki was like, this girl, and pulls up the picture. And my Gracie was like, yes, mom, I saw that picture when they were posted her on social media, and I felt a connection to her. That's my sister. We need to adopt her. Dad is right. And that was a confirmation that my wife needed, and just there's sobbing, you know. And my wife calls me and said, all right, I'm ready to start the paperwork. Let's do this. This is before I got home. And that's where we're at. So now.
Okay. So many things. When it comes to adopting a child that is older like that, I mean, the first thing you brought up that Nikki had asked, like, we don't know what trauma she's been through. That's something that a lot of people kind of pause on because they're worried about that. Was that not a concern for you at all?
I mean, it's a concern, right? It was something like as we progressed and started working the adoption agency, and I started reading through her file and the different things that she's been through. In my mind, I knew that she was our daughter, and that we would take it. We would just deal with whatever we needed to deal with. Learning about what we needed to deal with was important and how we were going to do that, but it wouldn't have changed my mind.
What about having a language barrier?
We can get through that.
So wait, are you and your wife taking classes to learn how to speak Spanish or what?
We are. We're learning Spanish and working through that. And I 100% want her to understand her culture and continue to speak Spanish. Learning Spanish has been a process for us. And there's a certain side of like, you know, we don't want to completely just speak Spanish because we want her to adapt and learn English. And but yeah, we're in the process of doing that. We've got little post-it notes like on the fridge, like this is what the Spanish word for
like this is butter and stuff.
Yeah, all this stuff all over the house.
She'll have to learn how to say ketchup.
Oh, 100%. Yes. Yes.
I just, you know what I love is that you and your wife, everything has been an adventure for you. And this is another adventure. Now we're going to adopt this child. We're going to learn how to speak Spanish. It's just a whole nother adventure to do together.
Yeah. Yeah, my kids, it's interesting. They're like, Dad, can we just take a breather for 1 minute, for 1 year, and not do something like way out of the box? I'm like, no, we got to stay. We just got to keep going where the Lord wants us to go. Let's keep our hearts open.
So what happens? Like the next time you see her, is it just going to be when you're showing up to take her home or what? Like, how does this work?
Yeah. So we are about 3/4 of the way through the adoption process. And so again, at this point, she has no idea that we're in the process of adopting her.
Why can't she know?
Part of the rules, they don't in case something happens.
Okay.
You know, they don't want to have that trauma for her. And here's the cute thing that I hope that the orphanage can record in some way. So on my phone that I was using to translate, I had a picture of my family, and I would try to hide it as much as I could because I didn't want her to see that, because I didn't want to create any issues with that. But she took my phone she borrowed my phone one time when I asked her that question. What questions do you have for me? And she took it and she saw my family and she looked at that picture, and I could tell she was looking at it. And then, you know, I took my phone back and entered it. So we're at the point where we are going to present her with a gift to announce that we are adopting her. And so the front cover of that book is going to be the picture that she saw on our phone of my entire family. And then they'll tell her at that point. And that will probably be like a month. It won't be till about July. And so at that point, she'll know that we're adopting her. And I'm praying that I can get someone at the orphanage to record her seeing that book for the first time and knowing that we're coming. And then in July, the other unique thing is we'll travel to Colombia to bring her home. And one of the travel requirements is that we would need to live in country for 4 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
What about the rest of the family?
So the family is going to come out for the first 10 days, and Nikki with the older kids, and we'll be there for 10 days, and then they'll fly back, and then I'll stay there with our daughter for the remaining 3 weeks.
Oh my gosh, this is like so crazy, and I'm so excited for you and to get to watch all of this go down. How do your older kids that are still living at home feel about this? Like all of a sudden having a sibling that's close in age. Isn't she the same age as Allie?
She's the same age as Allie.
That's wild.
Allie is super excited. Like
pumped. So are they going to share a room? Like what is advised for a child like that coming in at that age? You know what I mean?
I mean, they're open to, like, she could share a room. We're going to have a separate room for her. They recommend having a period where it's kind of like what they call a nesting period after the child's home so that you can sort of bond. And we'll do that, like, where we live out in the country, we have opportunities to kind of, you know, like, do different things outside and be together. And we'll maybe not, like, do big trips or different things for a little while. But, yeah, I think it's our kids have... It's really interesting. When I told my oldest son, I'm like, hey, just so you know, we're going to adopt a 13-year-old girl from Colombia that doesn't speak any English. She's going to join our family in probably the, you know, late July. And he's like, cool. You know, it's just like, I love that, though.
Very chill.
Yeah, it's just like, we'll work through this. We'll
now, what about,
out.
But what about somebody like Will, though? Because I imagine, I mean, is he ever going to be able to learn how to speak Spanish or...
No.
Like, what about, have you thought about that barrier of them trying to communicate?
Yeah, that's again, one of those things where, like, I mean, Will has been able to communicate with people through just emotions, body language. Like, I know she loves hugging, so we're set. Like, Will's going to, they're going to bond pretty simple, right? And
do you think he'll understand that when you say she doesn't speak English?
Probably not. No. But Will...
Will he be like, Dad, what is she saying?
Will already claims that he knows Spanish. So I shot this video of him the other day. I'm like, how do you say taco in Spanish? And he goes, balita.
He just makes up
things. So yeah, he's just going to be... He's figuring it out on his own. They'll have their own language together, I'm sure. It'll be really cute.
Has there been classes that you've had to take to kind of go through what it's like to adopt an older child or... How does that work?
Yeah, it's been extensive, like the paperwork, the training, which, I mean, obviously they want to have parents prepared to do this. But yeah, having the experience with our older daughter being adopted as well has kind of helped us to leap into that pretty easily. There's it's quite extensive, and there's so many hurdles for these children in coming home to families, but we're working through it. And thankfully, I'm very like, Nikki says I'm the fun dad, and she's like the more organized person. So we balance each other out. She does all the paper. She's done most of the paperwork. And so I tell her, I'm like, wow, if we didn't have you on this, we would be way behind. So thankfully, Nikki's like the organized person getting us all through on that.
If someone listening is on the fence about growing their family or adoption, what advice would you give them?
Well, I would say that, you know, adoption is, if you're feeling inspired to adopt, to be very prayerful and to lean into that and to speak to other families who have adopted. Like, if you're feeling inspired to adopt, if you're feeling inspired to, whether it's a typical child or a child with special needs, there's so many websites. Discover a family who's done that before and talk to them about what you're feeling and then be prayerful about it, right? And one thing with the organization I work for, we say it was like, adoption is hard, but it's the most beautiful hard you'll ever experience, right? And so whether it's domestic adoption or international adoption, these kids, every child deserves a family. So lean into that inspiration that you're feeling.
Where can people follow you to watch the videos of your family, follow along with the adoption process? And then also, where can people support you financially in this adoption if they feel inclined in their heart to do so?
Oh, that's great. Thank you for asking. Yeah, so social media is like one of our Instagram specifically is one of our main platforms that we work through. So That Dad Blog. And I also have a blog That Dad Blog, and our YouTube channel as well, under the same name as That Dad Blog, where we're going to be documenting all of our journey and sharing that. So love to have people follow and see the journey as we move into this next chapter of our life. And then for donations, we actually have a book, Wilcom Fly Book, that we have all the pictures of Will flying, and that you can purchase that, and the proceeds from that will go towards our adoption to help fund with our adoption, and that's at willcanfly.com. So W-I-L canfly, C-A-N, .com. And so, yeah, we'd love that support, or Venmo, that, and that's at That Dad Blog as well.
I'll put all of that also in the show notes, the description of the episode. So if you want an easy link, we'll put all of that there. Alan, happy Father's Day.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much for sharing this story. And I'm just so touched to get to meet you. So thank you for coming on The Spillover.
Thank you, Alex. It's great to meet you as well.
You have to start following Alan's family on Instagram at That Dad Blog. It is such a special pocket of the internet that they've created that has stayed just pure and positive for so many years. And for this show, primarily having a young female audience, it's men like Alan who remind us what a godly husband and father are supposed to look like and what traits you should pray for in a future husband. Or if you're already married, pray that God will create such an overflowing love of fatherhood in his heart, just like what Alan has. This was my first ever adoption story episode. I believe the only other time I covered adoption was in my Katie Faust interview from season 3. We talked about the ethics of the fertility industry and discussed the differences between surrogacy and adoption and why that's important, because a lot of people here, pro-life people like myself, because I talk about it a lot, say that surrogacy isn't ethical. And then they're like, well, how is that different from abortion? Because you're taking that child away from their biological parent. But actually, it's very different. And so all those details are explained so that, you know, you can then understand why someone may say they're pro-adoption but anti-surrogacy. If you are a special needs parent or adoption grew your family, it would be such a cool thing to share those stories with me in your 5-star reviews this week or the Cute Servatives Facebook group. That is like where the whole community of women that listen to this show are, and we talk on a daily basis, and it's super fun, and everybody's sharing their life stories and asking for advice and all kinds of good tea. That is basically the overflow of conversation started in this podcast, and that way everyone can see your adoption or special needs stories. Next Thursday on The Spillover, I'm talking to an expert at debating abortion who happens to be atheist. Super unique. Not a lot of people realize that there are more than just conservative Christians in the pro-life movement. She's going to teach us how to argue for life and win using only scientific evidence. New episodes come out Thursdays anywhere you get your podcasts at 9 p.m. Pacific and midnight Eastern. I'm Alex Clark, and this is The Spillover. Love you. Mean it. Bye.